Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, June 14th, 2021. Coming up this hour,
President Biden meets with NATO leaders in Brussels.
World leaders emerge from the G7 summit with a tough stance on China.
The UK prepares to push back plans to lift pandemic restrictions.
And Apple plans to drop mask requirements for vaccinated customers.
The Trump Justice Department is said to have secretly sought data on former White House counsel Don McGahn. Plus, more good news in the COVID fight in New York. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Nets lost their playoff game in Milwaukee. The Islanders won their playoff game at Tampa Bay. The Mets and Yankees both lost.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 106.1 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
I'm Amy Morris. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. IBKR charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. Rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
And U.S. futures are modestly higher to start the week. It is 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures up almost 5 points. Dow futures up 27. NASDAQ futures up 36. The 10-year Treasury down 3/32. The yield 1.46%. Yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude up 0.7% at $71.43 a barrel. COMEX gold down 1.1% at $18.59.20 an ounce, and the euro is at 1.2114 against the dollar. Amy?
Nathan, President Biden's overseas trip continues this morning. He's in Brussels for the NATO summit after wrapping up a G7 meeting where China was a major focus.
I think you're going to see just straightforward dealing with China. And again, we're not looking, as I've told Xi Jinping myself, I'm not looking for conflict. Where we cooperate, we'll cooperate. Where we disagree, I'm going to state it frankly.
President Biden says G7 nations are taking a strong hand on China's economic issues and human rights practices. He also raised the possibility that COVID-19 may have originated from a Chinese lab.
Well, today's main event is a NATO meeting in Brussels. After that, it's off to Geneva, where the president meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Mr. Biden has a modest goal for the meeting. Don't let relations get any worse.
This is not a contest about who can do better in front of a press conference or try to embarrass each other. It's about making myself very clear what the conditions are to get a better relationship.
President Biden's meeting with Vladimir Putin will mark the end of his 8-day overseas trip, and it comes on Wednesday.
Turning to the Middle East now, for the first time in a dozen years, Israelis woke up to a new government and a new prime minister. Naftali Bennett secured the backing of parliament to remove Benjamin Netanyahu from power. Bloomberg's Sylvia Westall has more from Dubai.
It's definitely the end of this 12-year stint as prime minister. But, you know, he is pledging a comeback, and that could take a while, but it's still something that's on the cards. And, you know, he's still Israel's most recognizable politician. And, you know, he will focus on any weaknesses in this governing coalition that really brings together very, very disparate views and is really only bound together through an effort to oust him from power. So we definitely shouldn't sign off on Netanyahu's political career just yet.
Bloomberg's Sylvia Westall reports the new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, opposes Palestinian statehood and the Iran nuclear deal. He will serve until August of 2023.
In Europe, the pandemic is front and center this morning. COVID restrictions in the UK were set to lift 1 week from today, but now Prime Minister Boris Johnson is preparing to delay the move. We get more from Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Caroline Hepker in London.
The surge in the Delta variant has forced Johnson and his team to rethink their blueprint for ending social distancing rules, which was pegged to next Monday. Instead, officials now expect the Prime Minister to announce a delay of as long as another month to the easing of most rules. A delay would be a blow to entertainment, hospitality that have been closed or operating under tight controls during the pandemic. The official announcement comes later today. In London, Caroline Hepker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Caroline. And back here in the U.S., we're seeing an easing of pandemic restrictions from one of the world's biggest companies. Let's get that story now live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Amy. Apple plans to drop its mask requirement for vaccinated customers at many U.S. stores. It's a move that'll mark yet another major retailer moving away from the COVID-19 safety protocol. Bloomberg News has learned that Apple began informing retail employees in impacted markets of the change, which could go into effect as early as tomorrow. Employees were told they will not be required to ask customers for verification of vaccination. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. We're keeping an eye on Bitcoin this morning thanks to another tweet from Elon Musk. He says Tesla would resume transactions with the cryptocurrency once mining is done with more clean energy. We get more from Bloomberg's Eddie Vanderwald.
This just underlines how risky it is investing in cryptocurrencies, because if somebody who has intrinsically nothing to do with the project can move the price by so much, I mean, we're sitting back at $40,000 per Bitcoin, more or less. If you can see these big moves simply by the executive of a car company talking about the technology, that's really worrying for you as an investor.
Bloomberg's Eddie Vanderwalt says Musk reiterated that Tesla sold about 10% of its Bitcoin holdings. The CEO said that was to demonstrate the token's liquidity.
And on the economic front this week, it is all about the Federal Reserve. The central bank issues a policy decision on Wednesday. Economists expect the Fed's dot plot to shift to a liftoff around 2023. Let's get more now from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
According to economist survey by Bloomberg, Federal Reserve officials this week could project interest rate liftoff in 2023 amid faster economic growth and inflation, but they will not signal scaling back bond purchases until August or September. More than half are predicting the quarterly rate forecast dot plot released after the conclusion of the Fed's two-day policy meeting on Wednesday will show the median of 18 officials penciling in at least one increase in 2023. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Right now, equity futures and bond yields are on the rise, with S&P futures up 4 points, Dow futures up 31, NASDAQ futures up 34. The 10-year Treasury is down 4/32, with the yield now 1.46%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. It is 6:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to find out what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. The Trump Justice Department is said to have subpoenaed data from Apple of then White House counsel Donald McGahn and his wife in early 2018. According to the New York Times report, it was the latest instance of alleged actions by the Justice Department during the Trump administration to secretly obtain information. Records of at least two House Democrats were also reportedly sought. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is now demanding Senate Republicans join Democrats to subpoena then Attorneys General Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr, saying this is not a partisan issue.
There are many Republicans who always look at overreaching executive branch authority, and we're hopeful that they will join us in requesting this subpoena, in demanding this subpoena.
Schumer says what happened here are the fingerprints of a dictatorship, not a democracy. It's another positive step in the fight against COVID-19 in New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state's numbers continue to hit record lows and is close to a vaccinations-related benchmark to ease most remaining restrictions. Cuomo says the state's single-day positivity rate was at 0.35%, a record low since the pandemic began. A U.S. father-son duo charged with helping former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn flee trial in Japan a year ago and pleaded guilty in a Tokyo court today. Michael Taylor and Peter Taylor were extradited to Japan from the U.S. earlier this year. Actor Ned Beatty has died. Beatty was in numerous movies, including Network.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Beatty was also in Deliverance, Nashville, and All the President's Men. His manager says Beatty died from natural causes at age 83. A Pekingese named Wasabi won best in show yesterday at the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. Because of COVID, this year's show, usually held in February, was held outdoors in suburban Tarrytown. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right, thank you, Michael. 6:10 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy, the Nets have the big three. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, except that for most of the season, one or two of them were always injured. They began this series with Milwaukee with all three healthy, but Harden went down in the opening minute of the series with a hamstring, and yesterday Irving sprained his ankle. It left the Nets with only Durant. They lost Game 4 to the Bucks, 107-96, and the series, which has seen the home team win every game, is now tied at 2. It's not known if Irving can play Game 5 tomorrow in Brooklyn. Harden is unlikely to play. 2 years ago, only the Knicks had a worse record than Phoenix. The Suns just finished a sweep of Denver to advance to the West Finals. Islanders opened their Stanley Cup semifinal series at Tampa Bay with a 2-1 victory. Goals by Matt Barzal and Ryan Pulock. 30 saves for Semyon Varlamov. He had a shutout until the final minute. The Mets going for a sweep of San Diego had the lead in the seventh inning. The Padres scored six times. Fernando Tatis Jr. with a grand slam. The Padres won 7-3. Only the sixth home loss of the season for the Mets. Yankees starting pitching struggled again. Domingo Herman gave up 7 runs on 10 hits. Yanks had only 4 hits, and the Phillies won 7-0. What a weekend in Paris for Novak Djokovic. First, he beat 13-time French Open champ Rafael Nadal, and then a comeback from a 2-set deficit in the final with Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Couldn't be happier and more satisfied with this kind of scenario in the last 48 hours. I mean, probably ranks at the top three all-time achievements and experiences that I had in my professional tennis career.
Djokovic, only the third player ever and the first in over 50 years to have won all four Grand Slams twice. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports, ain't it?
All right, thank you, John. Checking futures now. S&P futures up 4.25. Dow futures up 27. NASDAQ futures up 34.5. 10-year price down 3/32 with the yield at 1.46%. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's Donor Advised Fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Make your giving organized and tax efficient. Visit jcfny.org.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Stocks and bond yields are on the rise as we kick off a new trading week dominated by a key Federal Reserve meeting on Wednesday. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 4 points. Dow futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 33 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 3/32, yield 1.46% on the benchmark 10-year note. The 2-year yield is at 0.15%. NYMEX crude now up 0.8%, up 58 cents, $71.49 a barrel. Brent is up 0.9% at $73.36. COMEX gold down 1.1%, down $21.50 at $18.58.10 an ounce. The euro is at 1.2112 against the dollar. British pound, 1.4087. The yen is at 109.71. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan. President Joe Biden enters his first NATO summit in Brussels, aiming to consult European allies on efforts to counter provocative actions by China and Russia. Biden plans to underscore the U.S. commitment to a provision of the alliance charter that spells out that an attack on one member is an attack on all. Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving prime minister, has been ousted. Naftali Bennett is now the country's new leader following a close vote in Israel's parliament. The Nets fell to the Bucks in Game 4 of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. It's now tied at 2 games apiece. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Lightning in Game 1 of their Stanley Cup semifinal series. In Major League Baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost. The Nationals beat the Giants. The Red Sox and Orioles lost. The A's won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. As Michael mentioned, Israel has a new government and a new prime minister. Naftali Bennett secured the backing of parliament and ousted longtime leader Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's talk about this with Bloomberg's Kobi Ben-Melech in Tel Aviv. Kobi, I want to thank you for taking the time with us. Let's just start from the beginning. Could this be the end of Netanyahu's political career?
Well, if you ask Netanyahu himself, the answer is absolutely not. Yesterday, it was a very long and drawn-out swearing-in process, but he gave a very fiery speech. It was about half an hour, blasting the new government and saying that if we must go into the opposition, Israel has a parliamentary system, so there's members of the government who form a coalition, and they govern, and then there's those in the opposition. And he's going to be the head of that, those opposing parties. And he said, if we must go into opposition, we will, but we'll be there when this, he called it, terrible government, when it falls, we'll be there. And anything he said, that it will fall sooner than most people think.
So then, how will this government work? Because, as you know, setting up a government is a very different thing from the act of governing.
It's a great question, and it's really at the forefront of everyone's minds. I mean, it's composed of 8 different parties, and a lot of them are opposed to each other ideologically. You have left-wing parties, you have right-wing parties, you have secular parties, you have religious parties. For the first time in Israeli history, there's an Arab party. So they agree on very little in terms of, the bigger sort of fundamental issues that concern the state. But there are things that most people think that there are is broad. There's broad agreements, and that tends to be in economic policy. The data shows that Israel is one of the most unequal societies among developed nations, and the transport infrastructure needs work, and there are all several things like this that do need addressing. And this seems to be what this government is going to be about.
So, what would then be first on the new government's agenda?
Well, first and foremost, one of the main issues would be passing a budget. Israel hasn't passed a budget. They've been on a spending plan since 2019. So basically, the 2019 ended in 2020. It was just a holdover. So it didn't really reflect the state of the economy and where the priorities were. So that's the main priority for this new government. And again, that has to then reflect. I mean, in 2019, there was no pandemic. Now Israel's exiting from the crisis, but still unemployment's at 10%. And obviously things have changed drastically. One of the things also that the new government wants to do is to boost employment in tech. Tech here has boomed, massive amounts of investment. So it has to reflect the priorities of the economy. To where things stand now.
Kobi, you yourself tweeted about the extraordinary nature of this. You wrote, just a few weeks ago, Jews and Arabs were attacking each other on the streets of Israeli cities. Now the first government in history includes not just an Arab party, but an Islamic one. Can you address not just the historical, but the unusual nature of this shift in power?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, there's a rotation agreement between Naftali Bennett, who is what most people consider in Israeli politics to be a hardliner on the right, more right-wing than the previous, than his predecessor. He once called the idea of having a Palestinian state as nonsense. So here's a guy who's going to be the prime minister first, followed by Yair Lapid, he's more of a centrist figure. His focus is more on socioeconomic issues within the country, unity, unifying all the disparate, tribes you want that belong to Israel. And add to that just the wide range. I mean, it's really a rainbow of coalition and ideologies. Never seen in Tel Aviv before. I mean, we've seen unity governments where two big, camps managed to put together a government, but nothing like this. So it will be interesting to see how it operates.
All right, Kobe, I want to thank you very much for taking the time with us. Bloomberg's Kobe Ben-Melich in Tel Aviv talking to us live about the new government in Israel and ousting longtime leader Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's check futures now. S&P futures up 3, Dow futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 33 and 3 quarters, 10-year price down 2/32 with the yield 1.46% and the euro at 1.2113. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. We'll continue our conversation coming up. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Coming up on Bloomberg Daybreak, President Biden's European tour continues in a lead-up to a meeting with Russia's Vladimir Putin. Let's get the latest later from Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Amy Morris.
I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. President Biden is in Brussels this morning for the NATO summit. That's after wrapping up a G7 meeting where China was a major focus. The president once again raised the possibility that COVID-19 may have originated from a Chinese lab.
Whether or not this was a consequence of from the marketplace of a bat and, you know, interfacing with animals in the environment that caused this COVID-19, or whether it was an experiment gone awry in a laboratory. It's important to know the answer to that.
After today's meeting in Brussels, President Biden heads to Geneva for a highly anticipated meeting with Russia President Vladimir Putin. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that meeting will be the start of a long process aimed at establishing a more stable relationship.
To be able to talk to him directly, clearly, about these profound differences, and also to see if we can have a more predictable, stable relationship, but equally to make clear that if Russia chooses to continue to act aggressively, to act recklessly, we'll respond forcefully.
Secretary of State Blinken made the comments on Face the Nation from CBS, heard Sundays here on Bloomberg Radio.
A major development this morning overseas in the fight against the pandemic. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is preparing to delay his plan to lift England's pandemic restrictions. They were set to be eased a week from today, but now the UK is seeing a rise in COVID-19 cases.
Here in the U.S., one of the world's biggest companies is making a move to ease its pandemic restrictions. We get that story now live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Renita.
Amy, Apple plans to drop its mask requirement for vaccinated customers at many U.S. stores. It's a move that'll mark yet another major retailer moving away from the COVID-19 safety protocol. Bloomberg News has learned that Apple began informing retail employees in impacted markets of the change, which could go into effect as early as tomorrow. Employees were told they will not be required to ask customers for verification of vaccination. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. S&P futures right now are up 3 points. Dow futures up 12. NASDAQ futures now up 35 points. The 10-year Treasury down 3/32. The yield 1.46%. Yield on the 2-year 0.15%. And Bitcoin right now $39,135. Straight ahead, local headlines and sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. It is 6:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Amy. Israel has a new prime minister for the first time in 12 years. Naftali Bennett secured the backing of parliament and ousted longtime leader Benjamin Netanyahu. The two were slated to hold a handover meeting today, but without the formal ceremony that traditionally accompanies a change in government. A Netanyahu aide said the former prime minister was, quote, full of motivation as he assumes a role in the opposition to topple this dangerous government as soon as possible. The Trump Justice Department is said to have subpoenaed data from Apple of then White House counsel Don McGahn and his wife in early 2018. According to the New York Times report, the secret obtaining of phone records also includes Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is calling for immediate action to learn more from former Attorneys General Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr.
I'm demanding that the Senate Republican Party join Democrats to subpoena both Barr and Sessions, as well as John Demers, the Assistant Attorney General.
Schumer says these are the fingerprints of a dictatorship, not a democracy. Police in Austin, Texas are still searching for the second suspect in a mass shooting over the weekend that left one person dead. Police say 13 others were wounded. It's another positive step in the fight against COVID-19 in New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state's numbers continue to hit record lows and is close to a vaccinations-related benchmark to ease most remaining restrictions. Cuomo says the state's single-day positivity rate was 0.35%, a record low since the pandemic began. Police who have been banned from marching in New York City's Pride Parade are instead planning to take part in festivities in the Long Island suburbs. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It is a twist from a previous era in which they felt more comfortable marching in the city rather than closer to home, where acceptance of gay officers lagged. Pride organizers in New York City recently banned law enforcement groups from marching until at least 2025. Organizers on Long Island are inviting cops to take part and even donating a table for Nassau County Police to recruit. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Tank, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. 6:36 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's Jones Dash Hour.
Thanks, Amy. There'll be at least two more games between the Nets and Bucks, maybe three. Nets won the first two, including by 41 in game two. Then the Bucks won that low-scoring game three, only scored 86 points, only made 6 3-pointers. But yesterday, Milwaukee hit 16 threes, evened up the series, winning 107-96. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 34 points. Kevin Durant led Brooklyn with 28. Kyrie Irving left in the second quarter with a sprained ankle. So the Nets, who have been playing without the injured James Harden, may not have Irving either for Game 5 tomorrow in Brooklyn. And Denver, Phoenix finished off a second-round sweep led by the backcourt of Chris Paul and Devin Booker, a combined 71 points. The Nuggets, Nikola Jokic, just named NBA MVP, got thrown out of the game for a flagrant foul in the third quarter. The Tampa Bay Lightning going for back-to-back Stanley Cups. They beat the Islanders in this round last year, but the Isles took Game 1 in Tampa 2-1. They've won their last four playoff games, all since going back to Semyon Varlamov in goal. Unlike Saturday, no comeback this time for the Yankees in Philadelphia. The Phillies won 7-0 to sweep the two games. The two Yankee starters, Domingo Germán yesterday, combined to give up 11 runs in less than 5 innings, and the Yanks have lost 13 of 18 back in fourth place. First place Mets lead the Phillies by 3. The Mets lost to San Diego 7-3. Fernando Tatis, a tie-breaking grand slam in the 7th inning. Novak Djokovic, having come back from a 2-set deficit to win the French Open final with Stefanos Tsitsipas, now heads to Wimbledon in 2 weeks looking for a 20th Grand Slam title, which would tie him with Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. He's halfway to a calendar year Grand Slam. No one's done that since 1969. John Stashow, Bloomberg Sports. Jamie?
All right, thank you, John. It is 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks and some of the names that are moving in the pre-market. For that, we are joined by Bloomberg Stocks editor Dave Wilson. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Amy. Novavax, a notable stock in early trading, up 7%. The COVID-19 vaccine developer released study data showing its proposed shot was 90% effective in the trial. The company said plans to file for regulatory authorizations in the third quarter. Now, Novavax also put out results showing the vaccine worked against the virus's beta and alpha variants, first found in South Africa and the UK, respectively. Now, vaccine makers that already have shots out are lower. Moderna down 2% and Pfizer off 0.5%. In early trading.
And Dave, what is going on with cryptocurrency related stocks?
Well, they're higher. I mean, Bitcoin rallied yesterday after Tesla CEO Elon Musk said the electric car maker would resume allowing payments in the digital currency, once mining is done with more clean energy. So you have Coinbase Global up 2%, Square also up 2%, MicroStrategy up 4.5%, and Riot Blockchain up 7% in early trading. Tesla shares, by the way, higher by 0.5%. Ferrari, though, down 3%. The sports car maker was cut to sell from buy at Goldman Sachs. The firm cited an expected increase in capital spending for a move into electric vehicles. Goldman also said it no longer assumes the company will make up sales lost last year. Nikola, down 1.5%. Staying with electric vehicles, the truck developer agreed to sell as much as $300 million of stock to Tombstone Capital. The price of the sale wasn't set, and there is no upper limit on that price. Vertex Pharmaceutical up 1%. The drug maker rebounding just a bit from Friday's decline of 11%, which followed a decision to stop working on a proposed liver treatment. Money manager Kathy Woods ARK Investment disclosed it bought shares of Vertex on Friday. AMC Entertainment up 2.5%. Now, shares of the movie theater chain have swung more than 10% on all but three trading days in the past 3 weeks. During that time, AMC soared more than fourfold, so it's actually not so volatile early on. And we have a blank check deal, potential one to talk about. NextGen Acquisition up 33%. Billionaire Richard Branson's satellite company Virgin Orbit is near a deal to combine with the blank check company. That's according to UK Sky News, citing unnamed sources. Now, Branson's space tourism unit, Virgin Galactic, went public through a similar deal in October 2019.
All right, Bloomberg Stocks editor Dave Wilson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, Dave. And looking at stocks as a whole, ahead of the open, S&P futures up 3.75, Dow futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 41.75, 10-year price down 2/32, yield at 1.46%, and the euro at 1.21 against the dollar. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. Checking your weather now. Mostly cloudy today. We're going up to 75 degrees with more rain possible tonight as we go down to 65 degrees. We'll see 80 tomorrow with partly sunny skies. It is 67 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Stocks and futures are modestly higher as we kick off a new trading week. Let's head right over to the First Word Breaking News Desk for today's morning call with Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Nathan. Like you said, modest gains in the U.S. futures right now, with Dow futures up 6 points, S&P's gain 4, and NASDAQ futures rise by 45. The U.S. 10-year yield holding steady at 1.46%. Gold is down 23, and Shanghai fell 0.6% overnight, while European markets are also posting modest gains this morning. Back in the U.S., nothing to report on the economic front. And in deal news, Cano Health buys University Healthcare for $600 million. And in other news, Elon Musk said that Tesla will allow transactions in Bitcoin once mining is done with more clean energy. Also, Nikola said that Tombstone Capital to purchase up to $300 million in stock. Wrapping things up, Chipotle was raised to strong buy as Raymond James sees a boost from higher prices. Live from the First Word Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Nathan?
Okay, Bill, thanks. And to hear live breaking news on your Bloomberg, type squawk on the terminal, S-Q-U-A, go. We'll get you there. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now with more on what's going on around the world, here's Michael Barr. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Biden is in Brussels for today's NATO summit. On the agenda today, climate change, China, Russia, and Afghanistan. Yesterday, Biden wrapped up the G7 summit in England and a meeting with the Queen. Benjamin Netanyahu was unseated as prime minister after 12 straight years in power. Israel's parliament voted to remove him from office. Religious Jewish nationalist Naftali Bennett, who opposes Palestinian statehood and the Iran nuclear deal, will serve until August of 2023. The Nets fell to the Bucks in Game 4 of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. It's now tied at 2 games apiece. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Lightning in Game 1 of their Stanley Cup semifinal series. Major League Baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost. The Nationals beat the Giants. The Red Sox and Orioles lost. The A's won. Global news, 24 hours a day. today on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Is your gas stove destroying the planet? I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Of the natural gas burned in American homes, just 2.8% is used for cooking. That works out to stoves being responsible for less than 0.2% of U.S. carbon dioxide emissions. So no, your gas stove is not a major contributor to global warming. But it also isn't a major contributor to gas utility revenues. If we switch our space heaters and water heaters to electric, which really could put a big dent in CO2 emissions, cooking alone would not be enough to justify maintaining a vast distribution network to pipe natural gas into homes. In some places, propane canisters like the ones used with gas grills might be a viable alternative. But in dense cities like New York, a lot more of us may have to get used to cooking with electric. I'm Justin Fox. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Bloomberg Opinion commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. It is 6:50 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Biden's European trip. It continues. He's in Brussels today for the NATO summit. The president is also heading to Geneva later this week for a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. And while he's away, the work continues on an infrastructure plan. For more on these and other stories, we welcome Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. Emily, the president coming off the G7 to go right into the NATO summit. How is this an opportunity to maybe rebuild some of these relationships? What is he going to do?
Well, this is very much on President Biden's agenda to rebuild sort of the U.S.'s standing within the world and among its allies. This is after his predecessor, former President Trump, really, you know, he criticized NATO. He didn't do meetings the last 2 years with the G7. He sort of pulled back from the U.S.'s role on the international stage. And President Biden is really seeking to reverse that. And a big part of that is coming from his drive to sort of unite various democracies against China and to sort of have this bloc stand firm against China's growing influence and some of the other things. I mean, one of the results of this G7 summit was a discussion about how these leaders can come up with their own sort of Belt and Road Initiative, helping infrastructure development in low-income countries and throughout the world. And in NATO, we're going to be seeing more discussion on China, according to the White House, as well as Russia, climate change, and cybersecurity.
Now, speaking of Russia, at the end of this 8-day trip, the president will be meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Now, there are those who say he should not even be taking this meeting. Why should he?
So President Biden is the one who actually asked for this meeting. And there is a bit of truth here. I mean, both sides do recognize that the likelihood of these two countries coming to an agreement or having what Secretary of State Anthony Blinken called a light switch moment, it's pretty low. What their expectations for this hearing are not high. Biden's main goal here is really to head off any sort of tensions with Russia that could interfere with his ambitious domestic agenda or what he wants to do with China. And so I think you're going to see President Biden go to Putin. I think you're going to see him bring up those hacking, sort of make a bit of a proposal to him, say you need to stop this or else XYZ will come, sort of show a minute of strength with Putin. But Russia is not a primary focus for President Biden's international agenda. It really more focuses on China.
All right. So now closer to home, House lawmakers are back today. Those infrastructure talks are ongoing. Where do things stand there now?
So last we heard, a group of 10, a bipartisan group of 10 senators came up with a $1.2 trillion package. And the White House says that they are working with senators on that. That is after talks with another group of Republican senators did fall apart. However, it's not clear that that plan has the key support of 10 Republican senators, which is what is needed to pass in the Senate. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying that it might be hard to pass that bill in the House. You really have Pelosi is going to be struggling to keep her caucus together because it is so diverse. Moderate members don't want to vote on a package that's not going to be able to pass the Senate. They're very worried about passing something that might increase taxes that doesn't give a benefit to their constituents. And progressives have been pushing very strongly for Democrats to go at it alone. But that's only going to work if all 50 Democratic senators agree to do so. And you see moderate senators like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema saying we need to try in good faith to have a bipartisan agreement before we go at it with only Democrats.
Okay, with all of that in mind, Emily, how much longer can these negotiations go on before Democrats do finally move and try to pass this without Republican support?
Amy, that is the trillion-dollar question here. I mean, you saw that there was initially a deadline for Memorial Day, and then there was one for last week. You're still seeing these discussions ongoing. Senator Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, has said that he wants the Senate to start moving on a bill in July. You're going to see a vote in the House later this month, just focused on roads and highways. I think there is growing pressure within the Democratic Party to come to some sort of agreement. Certainly after last week, you saw discussions between President Biden and Senator Capito fall apart. There is a sense that decision time is getting pretty close here because Democrats want to make sure that they're not only passing something while they still have control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, but they pass something with enough time that things can begin to get implemented so that people are actually seeing improvements in their infrastructure when the midterm elections come around.
All right. And at the same time, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has to keep her own caucus together as all this is going on. Thank you so much, Emily Wilkins. Emily Wilkins is Bloomberg government reporter, keeping us up to speed on all things going on in the Capitol. Read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg terminal. And a reminder, you can follow all of the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. It's brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, number one in the nation for student upward economic mobility and ranked in the top 2% nationally for alumni mid-career earnings. More at njit.edu. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. Managers hoping to lure employees into offices may find their youngest and newest staff are their strongest allies. It's a dilemma. Young white-collar staff value quality of life over old-fashioned 9-to-5 commuting, but they're more worried about seeing their careers stall unless they head back into an office. Well over half of staff aged 21 to 30 stressed the importance of being able to meet and work with colleagues in person again. That was according to a 6,000-person survey carried out for Sharp. Nearly 60% said working in a modern collegiate office environment has become more important to them over the past year. Microsoft's much-anticipated Halo Infinite will be out this holiday season. The newest Halo will feature a standard single-player campaign mode and a multiplayer component that'll be free to all players, even if they don't buy the game. Halo is Microsoft's biggest video game series. And how much would you pay to fly in space with the world's richest man? Blue Origin raised $28 million by auctioning a seat to a company founder Jeff Bezos on a July 20th rocket ride. The identity of the winner won't be revealed for a few weeks. That live auction followed weeks of online bidding with more than 7,000 submissions from people in 159 countries. And that is the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. S&P futures right now up 4 points. Dow futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 48 points as we kick off a trading week dominated by a Fed decision. The 10-year treasury is down 2/32. The yield 1.46%. Bloomberg surveillance up next with Tom Keene, Lisa Abramowitz, and Romain Bostic. This is Bloomberg.